Welcome back to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Harry Dent as we talk about the future, your future, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Harry Dent with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Harry, over there, can you predict out 5 years from now?
Yes, you know, George, we can predict out decades. I mean, I was predicting this, you know, the trouble in the economy starting in 2008 back in the late 80s. Just from the baby boom generation when they would predictably spend and when they would stop spending. Mm-hmm. So, yes, what we see is that the worst of this downturn and what we call the winter season that started in 2008 will be over about late 2022 for stocks, 2023 for the economy will be the worst, and probably real estate out there or maybe a little longer. Real estate takes longer to crash and longer to come back. And then we'll start to see a global boom again from about 2023 all the way into 2036. That'll be the next global boom. The difference is, George, is that it will be concentrated, as it has been thus far, but even more so in Asia and especially in India and Southeast Asia. Most developed countries, a lot of Europe, Japan, and East Asia have continued bad demographics. The United States is kind of the best house in the bad neighborhood. Where our demographics are, we have a strong millennial generation, but not as strong as the baby boom. So we'll be in the middle. But yeah, we can tell about when the economy will turn around and where it will be the strongest. The other thing, the biggest bust and bubble burst already has been in commodities, and things like oil and iron ore. Commodities are down 70%. At worst so far, oil and iron ore, 80%. There's going to be another big commodity boom and bubble, which will be driven by the emerging world, and they're the biggest commodity producers and consumers. They spend much more of their money on that. So you can buy these metals and things like that, everything from gold to iron ore and copper and things like that, and there'll be an incredible boom. And again, you just wait for them to go down first. So yeah, the next... But between now and 2022-23 is going to be way more on the downside. And after that, the world starts to recover. And again, that's when you buy stuff. And the only difference, mm-hmm. Warren, George, is that real estate has a new factor that's never had before. Because the baby boom was so large and because older people, when they die, they are literally permanent sellers, if you want to call it, of real estate. And more countries, including the U.S. today and massively in Japan, and places like Germany, there's more old people dying and selling homes than young people of the next generation coming and buying. So when we adjust for that, real estate is not going to come zooming back in a lot of countries like stocks will. So, and of course, the aging baby boom sectors like healthcare will do better than other sectors. So in our newsletter, which, by the way, people can get on our free newsletter by just going to harrydent.com, and that's going to be the best place to be in the next year, that it's going to be different sectors. The next boom is not going to favor everything. 83 to 2007, everything went up. The next boom is going to be more selective, but there will be the next global boom, and we can tell you when it's going to come, and we can tell you about when it's going to peak.
Harry, what happens if we have a regional war somewhere? What's that going to do to the economy?
Well, you know, wars are actually stimulative in a lot of ways, especially if you're not fighting it. People don't realize World War I was the greatest gift ever given the United States. Europe was at war, and we were supplying them with everything from farm and commodity products to, you know, transportation, automobiles, tanks and everything. We became a major exporter to Europe over that. So, you know, that goes both ways, but wars tend to cause higher inflation. Wars disrupt things, and the Great Depression was followed by World War II. The disruption around the world makes people angry, as we're seeing now, and even worse this time. And when things get scarce and there's a fixed pie, countries tend to fight over things. This trade war, and we said this in the Zero Hour book, you know, came out a year ago. This trade war with China, and it's a global thing as well. This is not just a short-term thing. And Jack Ma from Alibaba came out just a month ago and said this is going to take at least 20 years to sort out. This is a major war between the leading two countries, the U.S. and China, who's going to be king. And that's why China should be giving in more, because Trump's right about this. They need us. Our trade is three times tilted towards them. This is going to hurt them more, but it's more important to them because they're the up and coming, and they don't want to give in too much because they see this as a long-term battle and they think longer term. So I don't know if it's more a trade war, but there's certainly, after this downturn, coming out of this downturn, the potential for wars around the world will tend to grow.
That's what I thought. Let's go to Peter in Cottonwood, Arizona, to get things started with us. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Hey, thank you for taking my call. This is great.
Sure.
Is there going to be a bank holiday during this crash?
That's an interesting question. What do you think, Harry?
Yeah. I mean, that definitely tends to happen, and that's what happened in the Great Depression, of course, because people don't realize banks can lend up to 10 times their reserves, and guess what? Their reserves are 10% of their deposits, and whose money is that? That's our money they're pledging. Now, they also tend to have, you know, capital they raise up to about 10%, so they're at risk of too. But yes, when you get in problems like this, banking system will get in trouble, especially when real estate goes down. That, and we saw that in 2008 and 9 forward. And all of a sudden, they don't have money. Now, the new trick, and then I'm getting ready to go and do a 5-city tour in Australia, and it's a big concern there because their housing bubble is already starting to crack ahead of ours this time, is that banks in Cyprus just said, well, you know what? We need money. We're just going to swipe out of the more affluent accounts. We're just going to take, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of their account and say, look, I'm sorry, we need this. We're going to take your deposits and we're going to convert them into equity in our dying bank. Who wants equity in a dying bank? So this is in even in Australia, people are realizing they're not supposed to do that, but there's loopholes where in an emergency banks can do that. So people have to worry, you know, you need to spread your money around. I tell people all your excess money, other than you need to pay your bills, should be in a brokerage account, whether it's in a bank or a brokerage firm or an online firm. I prefer firms that are not into lending. That's why I like a lot of the online trading firms to have. Have it in a brokerage account because they can't borrow against that. They can't swipe that. But they can deposits and savings accounts. So, yes, this can happen. And people lost their deposits. A lot of people, there was a run on the banks. This happens. And the magnitude of what I'm talking about is exactly when it happens. It doesn't happen in a normal recession like we've seen. It started to happen in some countries the last global crisis. It will happen big time in some countries worse than others.
Next up, we go to Keith in Rochester, New York. Keith, take it away.
Mr. Dent, I want to ask about Puerto Rico, which was already $73 billion in debt before the hurricane struck, and because of all the corruption there, which is the real reason why the recovery has been slow, the former New York governor, George Pataki, is having to head a committee so that the bondholders get their money back. Two questions. I live in Rochester here, where a lot of the Puerto Ricans, believe it or not, are ending up. They are lower skilled workers who are not finding work, and us taxpayers are having to pay for their relief. And you're the first one to say that we're getting the better trained people. That's not happening up here in New York, the former Empire State. And secondly, California, which is not friendly to business, when people flee the state, they insist on taking their short-sighted left-wing politics with them. They go to a place like Texas, a formerly all-red state, which is now only purple. To sum this up, these people with their left-wing politics, they're spreading their disease all over the place. Antifa, the extreme left-wing organization, has taken over Portland, Oregon. The officials there are letting Antifa run that city. I'd like you to wrap it up here. A very conservative guy like me, I'm saying flat out, we're facing true civil war, and us conservatives are ready to fight, and some of what you're saying makes sense, but it's much more dire than that. We're going to be at each other's throats. And starting with that Puerto Rican example, and I'm going to say this bluntly if I can, too many Hispanics, like black Americans, vote Democratic. They will not give Republicans and conservatives a chance. And the same way that all of these urban areas have been struck dumb because of liberal Democratic policies, we're having, I'm going to say this bluntly, the non-white people, blacks and Hispanics, they vote in a herd instinct Democrat, and because not too many of them vote Republican and conservative, we're heading for dire times. And
okay, hey, let me real quickly. You're right about the Democratic thing. There's no way that Puerto Rico is going to become a state now with the Republicans in charge. And they want to become a state now. They didn't before because they didn't get the help in Maria. If you go to Orlando, I used to be in Tampa right near there, Orlando is the ones getting these high quality. I'm telling you, in Puerto Rico here, there's a shortage of doctors, dentists, professionals, everything, because those are the people most moving. So it may not be happening in Rochester, but you go to Orlando or Texas, you're going to see a different story. Most of the Puerto Ricans in the 50s and 60s moved up into the Northeast, but they're mainly moving into Florida first and then places like Texas. So it is a mixed bag, but I agree with you 100%. There is this red-blue war, and it is serious, and there is going to be a lot of tensions and civil unrest. If there's this much now, imagine what it would be like if we had 15% unemployment in the U.S. like there is in Puerto Rico now. And that is one difference. These Puerto Ricans are not, don't have that sort of tension and that polarity. That's the one thing I can tell you, because I'm sitting here and I haven't even seen a bar fight, nevertheless, any crime where I am.
Harry, the fact that Hispanics and most African Americans are voting Democratic, big deal. What was his point?
Well, he's saying that you know, the red people don't like that. These are people that are going to vote blue, and we've got this blue-red war. So when they see Puerto Ricans, he's saying, come to Rochester. Well, we don't like them. He said they're not as high-skilled. Well, I'm telling you, in Orlando, they're not saying that. They are basically reinvigorating Orlando. There's 450,000 Puerto Ricans now in just Orlando and a million in Florida. And those million, which he is right about, are tilting the vote. All the key Senate races and stuff. And guess who they're appealing to? Those Puerto Ricans, the Republicans and the Democrats. Rick Scott and Bill Nelson are running for Senate. And they're both courting the Puerto Ricans because they're 5% of the vote, and that's enough to swing an election. And they do.
Isn't that what our
democratic?
Isn't that what our democracy is all about?
Yes, it is. It is.
Let's go to Greg in New Jersey. Take it away, Gregory.
Before I ask my question, George, and good morning.
Hi.
I'd just like to say I live in a congressional district in northern New Jersey. We get 30% of our federal tax dollars back. The blue states subsidize the red states, and the,
yes,
and the state that receives the most is Kentucky, where that idiot McConnell is. This drives me nuts, and it's been like this for 50 years. We subsidize the South and the Southwest. The Northeast does, and so does the Midwest. Now, as far for your guest, I've been reading the Financial Times for many years, and what you're saying is there's a column every week scaring the heck out of all of us with what you're saying. A little bit closer to home. I'm about 4 years from retirement after like 35 years, almost 40 years. Our entity, which is Nationwide, is centered in New York. Our pension was overfunded in the late 90s. It took a horrendous hit with the tech stocks, and then in 2008, almost got obliterated.
Almost got wiped out.
Yeah.
We have a meeting now. There's thousands of us about to retire, right? All high-tech guys, gals, the whole thing. We have a meeting in about 3 weeks at our entity. And I don't trust anybody on Wall Street. I think there should be a guillotine set up there, if you will, again. And Franklin Roosevelt should come down from heaven and come back. But the thing is, what do we ask our financial people who are running our pension fund with their fancy suits? What are they doing to anticipate this problem? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Yeah, you know, real quick, there's two problems. Not only the stock market starts collapsing, so everybody's been driven into the stock market because quantitative easing and monetary policies push down long-term rates that you can get on safer investments like treasury bonds and corporate bonds and things like that, which pension plans should be more in. But you can't get your 7 to 8% returns they used to get with a conservative combination of stocks and bonds. So everybody's gone more stocks, and then stocks start collapsing, then they're in trouble. The truth is, as much as it's counterintuitive, a pension plan today, the best thing you can do, what we're telling people right now, this breakup in yields is going to make bonds, corporate bonds and treasury bonds long-term more attractive. If that 30-year treasury bond goes up to 4.3%, we're telling our subscribers, this is likely to happen in the next several months, in the next year at the most. You're going to want to lock those in, not only to get a 4.3% return, that's way better than almost any stock dividend, but those bonds will appreciate when stocks collapse and the economy slows down and interest rates go down. Bonds like falling interest rates. So right now is not the time to buy these bonds, but there's going to be a huge opportunity for investors and pension funds to lock in quality bonds. It's only the quality bonds that did well in the Great Depression. AAA corporate, 10 and 30-year treasury bonds. Lock in those things for appreciation and for higher yields, and don't be in stocks. The worst place to be for a pension plan is to do what everybody's done, run into stocks and collapse. And you're also right about blue states subsidizing red. That's why I think this time around it's going to be the blue states that succeed against red policies that they don't agree with. But most of all, they're like, okay, see what happens to your red economy when New York and California, or when the Northeast and the West Coast secede from the Union. It would be a problem.
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thank you for taking my call, sir. Harry, your research is really appreciated. You brought up earlier that a corollary to depressions and major recessions is war. And you could argue that the world today is in a third world war that's a proxy war, you know, in places like Syria, Yemen, the South China Sea, etc. And when global corporations cannot compromise their differences in the global boardrooms, there's a shooting war, just like World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and on and on. So don't you think, I mean, a limited nuclear exchange could turn the United States into a third world country in a day or two, you know, with electromagnetic pulse, et cetera. What is the probability of a shooting war?
You know, I think that's much more likely between emerging countries, you know, like India and Pakistan. But what we're saying in Zero Hour, we trace global trade back to the 1800s, and there was a big surge into World War I. People don't realize globalization, global trade collapsed 60%. Between World War I and World War II, with a Great Depression in the middle, with a big trade war with rising tariffs, just like we're seeing now. Everything's happening like happened then. This works. Everybody does the selfish thing as a country, but it works against the whole. Everybody loses, or at least most countries lose. And that's what's happening now. This trade war with China, whether it ends up a shooting war or limited, like you say, in the South China Sea, there could definitely be stuff there. There's no question. There's problems there. Middle East, I don't see a major war between, like, say, the United States or Europe and Russia. There could be limited because nobody's big enough to challenge us. The one advantage we have is there is no countervailing power that could really take us on one-on-one. If somebody hit us, they would be dead long before we would. So I think that's kind of a good thing. We're in the early 1900s, mid-1900s. No, there were major countervailing powers. That's how you could have World War II. But we are going to definitely have huge political disputes. This trade war, we said in Zero Hour, before this became obvious, this is going to last 2 to 3 decades, exactly what Jack Ma just said. And there could be some physical war, but there's certainly going to be huge political and trade wars and things like that.
All right, Harry, stay with us. We're coming back for final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're talking about the paranormal with a psychiatrist. It's an amazing story. Stick around and find out why he's involved in that. And welcome back to Coast with Harry Dent Jr. His website, harrydent.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And as we get into the final calls here, Harry, thank you again for the amazing information you always give us.
Yep, love to reach your people, George, because people need to hear this.
Jason in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Jace. Go ahead.
Yeah, Harry, I want to ask you about a particular sector of the market. It's a new sector. It has to do with the pot stocks. And I happened to get in mid-July, just before the infusion into canopy growth with the beverage company, which happened to be pretty good timing. And I took a portfolio and actually doubled it in value from about a $50,000 up to a $100,000 portfolio. But my question is, would you would this kind of be buffered a little bit, particularly until the election this November? Because there are several states that are looking to that have it on the ballot. And if they legalize, usually when that happens, there's a kind of an upswing. Or would you pull out of that now because of this danger of what you're talking about taking place?
Well, yeah, that's a good question because, I mean, first of all, this is a long-term trend. And even blockchain and cryptocurrencies are, but all of these industries, above all, these are a hot sector like this will get hit strongly when we have a downturn because, first of all, everything gets hit. But the strongest sectors get hit the most because they bubble up the most, and people don't understand that. Same with high-end real estate. It's the best places are going to crash the most, and history has shown that. So you do have – I mean, I would say in this case, you may want to hold on just to the election and see if there's a pop. But, yes, I do think since you're in such a hot sector, take your gains, see what happens the next few years, especially the next year is going to be critical. And then, yeah, if things crash, that is a good sector to get back into. This is a long-term social political trend. It's going to go in that direction, although there may be some backlash in the downturn just because people get a little more conservative for a while. But you are in a good sector. But, yes, I don't want to be in a good sector when things crash, and that's what a lot of people miss. A lot of people say, well, this sector will do all right because I went in the Great Depression, the entire 30s, and looked for any major sector, toilet paper, utilities, movies, booze, things that people would maybe use more in a downturn, and because of that collapse in valuations and that fear factor, everything went down. I couldn't find anything, any major stock sector that made money in the 1930s. Only the high-quality bonds did. So, yeah, take your gains. Yeah, again, in your case, I might just see these elections pop and then go the other way or do 50-50. It's up to you, but there is danger there. You're right about that.
Harry, when the bottom falls out, how do you know it's hit the bottom? How do you know when to pop back in?
Well, again, I mean, we look at past corrections. I mean, and everything's different. This is not like, the 2008 to 2009 correction. It's not like the 70s correction. Stock corrections back then were 50%. That's more typical. This is more like these great resets, a deleveraging of a bubble, debt and financial assets, which of course stocks are the leading ones. When that happens, 70% is kind of the minimum you look for, and up to 80. And in the 1929 crash, 89% for the Dow, 89%. So I'm looking for levels like that. I think my range is 75% minimum up to 85%. That's when you start looking to buy. And again, we have the same thing on the flip side for bonds right now. If that 30-year Treasury bond, which has been up 3.4% recently, if that gets up to over 4%, between 4 and 4.3%, that's when I start buying. Even though that's the best thing in the downturn, it's too early to buy that. Right now, if you're going to park your money, just be in safe short-term bonds and CDs and T-bills and stuff to preserve your money. Next step is moving to long-term quality bonds, and then And these sectors, I mean, commodities will in emerging markets overseas will probably bottom first, and then develop country stocks, and then real estate. So there'll be a succession of buying opportunities. So, I mean, and stuff like that. You're in a good market like the marijuana and pot industry, especially the medicinal side, which is a slam dunk winner long term. Wait for the – you may get to buy into that a little earlier than something like, home builders.
Next up, Alan is in Paducah, Kentucky. First-time caller for us. Hello, Alan.
Hey, George. Love the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but red states are Republican.
Yep.
Okay, and blue states are Democrats.
Blue are Democrats.
All right. Mr. Dent, did you not say earlier, or did I misunderstand you, that you said the South was red during the Civil War?
Yes, they would have been more, even though, you know, they called Lincoln a Republican back then, the Republican Party was not the same. I know my father helped build the Republican Party in the South and helped get Nixon elected through Southern voters, and that's a whole different party. He had to convince a lot of Democratic politicians and senators that they were really Republican. They were Democrats traditionally all the way back to the Civil War. So the Republican-Democratic label actually was the opposite back then. No, you're right. I mean, red is Republican, blue is Democrat in the present time frame. And then the Republicans are in charge now. If you do see a major downturn, I just have to tell you from history, it is going to favor the Democratic Party just like it did in the 30s. We had Republicans, Hoover, coming into that. When things crash, they go to the people. They're going to hand out money to the people. They go to the Democrats in a downturn, in a bull market, and the rich are getting richer, and a lot of innovation that favors the Republicans. Our long-term research shows we are going to switch from a Republican era here to a Democratic one for a number of decades, and that's just something, you know, the blue people are going to like that, the red people won't. But all I do is report the facts. I'm not partisan in my work. Republicans are always going to be here. Democrats, it's a play of opposites that's just as important as men and women and booms and busts and inflation and deflation and every other play of opposite. And it goes back and forth. The same thing. The West has dominated the world since the Industrial Revolution. Well, guess who's going to dominate in the coming decades and even century? It's going to be the East. And that's another trend we can clearly show through cycles. So what we do is just show people, here's the trends, this sector, that sector, inflation, deflation, this country, that country, blue, red. I mean, we can do all this stuff. The long term is surprisingly predictable, and that's where economists get it wrong. Economists think the short term is predictable. I'm guessing. When I tell you I think this thing's going to top now or so many months from now, I'm making an educated guess that may make me 60 to 70% right, but never 100. When I told people 20 years ago baby boomers were going to peak in 2007 and the economy was going to slow down in its gears, that was not a guess. That's science of when people predict money, just as accurate as when life insurance actuaries will tell people when they die collectively.
Next up, let's go to Gordon in Lakeland, Florida on the wildcard line. And Gordon, by the way, next week we're doing a show on student loans.
Oh, wow, what a coincidence. Now, George and Harry, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
That's my traditional greeting or intro. Now, first off, I'm a right-wing conservative. If you ask Google, who's this Gordon over in Lakeland, Florida, that lost a 4-3 decision on the Terry Schiavo thing, I did better than Jeb Bush. It'll find me. It'll tell you my last name. I'm not going to tell it to you. I'm pro-gun, pro-gun rights. I'm fiscally conservative. So when I say that the Democrats and the Republicans have taxed students to death with college tuition and not done anything, both parties are bad, and voters in both parties don't want to be overtaxed. Tuition is a form of tax money going to an arm of the government. Both the Democrat and Republican voters want their Second Amendment rights, and they don't like abortion, although one is more favorable. So I have a question for you, and this is a very tough question. Will H.R. 2366, which allows student loans to be bankrupted on equal terms as credit cards and rich people like President Trump and rich Democrats, will student loans be allowed bankruptcy, which would fend off predatory lending and, of course, slow down a bubble, be a free market check against a bubble? Now, George thinks that it's not going to happen, and I don't know. I kind of think it will, but I don't know. I'm optimistic. I'm going to stay on the line because I know that you're going to have questions, and I want to get a few licks in because I want H.R. 2366 to pass.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, this is going to have to happen. A lot of rules are going to change, just like banks may suddenly start swiping money out of more affluent accounts. They're going to have to have forgiveness. These loans are going to have to be restructured. All loans are going to have to be restructured, except for the most sovereign, like U.S. Treasury bonds and debt may not be. But this is the key to going through this. The countries that restructure their debt, and we restructured massive amounts of private debt in the Great Depression, it made us stronger coming out. Japan never restructured any of their debt, and they're in a coma economy forever, even when their next young generation has come along. So my bet is that they're going to come to a point where we're going to have to say, no, we have to allow restructuring of student loans. They're too onerous. We went too far in that. To me, what happened, the education establishment, I'll even call it a mafia, basically overcharging, had the greatest inflation next, you know, of any sector, education, even more than healthcare. They're on a run, and when that got too hard, they say, okay, well, if we can encourage student loans, then people can afford these higher prices, and we can keep our bubble going. This bubble has to burst, and too many students are never going to be able to pay off these loans. So when you have excess loans, it's better to admit it, just like a drug addict, and then change policies and restructure, detox, I call it, deleverage and go on. We're going to have to forgive or restructure down these student loans, however it happens. If it makes a changing in the rulings, yes, I would say that's highly likely in the next couple of years.
In 2008, Harry, I thought one way to bail out everything would be to give people like $100,000 in a voucher to buy some goods. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I don't like money printing except in emergencies. Like, I think they should have done money printing, quantitative easing for the first year in 2009, like they did, just to make sure the banking system doesn't just melt down like it did rapidly in the Great Depression. But to put it on, permanent quantitative easing just perverts the entire system as bad. But the second thing I always said, if you're going to print money, don't give it to the damn banks who got us in trouble and did all this leverage and derivatives and all this crazy stuff in the first place. Just send periodically to get us out of this, at least send the money to everyday people. Send them a check. I wouldn't say $100,000, but if they'd have sent everybody every household a $20,000 check, that would have done a lot better for the economy. And then in that would have helped banks because things wouldn't have been as bad for the economy, but it would have helped people instead of the banking system. This whole bailout, yep, this whole quantitative easing has only made Wall Street stronger, only made the rich richer, only benefited corporations, including these tax cuts, and has not benefited Main Street.
Well, the reason why I wanted it as a voucher as opposed to a check, Harry, is because I wanted them to be forced to spend it rather than gamble it. You know?
That's right. If they don't spend it, you're right. That's a much better way. The point is to get everyday people some relief and to have them spend that money to stimulate the economy. And then that helps the businesses and banks and everything. But it should have gone to the people and not to the damn banks.
Next up, we go to Harry in Port Huron. Hello, Harry. Good to have you.
Well, hello there, George. And Harry, I've got a question for you. You mentioned earlier about the banks, and you mentioned it again just now about taking the money, swiping the money. What about credit unions? Are they going to be doing the same thing, or what's up with those?
Okay, I would much rather have my money in a credit union than a money center bank, because that's where all the leverage has been. It was kind of opposite in the Great Depression. A lot of people, a lot of the problems was farms were overexpanding and borrowing money, and those were in more rural areas, and that's where the trouble is. And it was rural banks going under more than the money center banks. This is totally a money center bank thing. And also, when you do, if governments have to expropriate money or pull accounts, they're going to go for the more affluent accounts, and those are going to be in the bigger money center banks. So I'd much rather have my money in a credit union than, Bank of America or Wells Fargo or Citibank and stuff like that.
Okay, let's take a call or two before we wrap things up with Harry Dent. Hi, Barbara in North Carolina.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
I think Harry just answered part of one of my questions, but before I ask the rest of my questions about protecting my money, I wanted to let you know that you played a part in my evacuating New Hanover County with Florence. I came out to Asheville on the 25th, and ended up staying for two more weeks, and about the time I was going to come back, here comes Florence.
Yep.
Stay put.
It's all about timing.
It's all about timing. One of my guardian angel moments, I call it. Part of what you just answered, my question was about the smaller amounts. So my Social Security income, which isn't that much, I don't have to worry about that so much as a larger account holder. Is that what I understand?
Yes. I mean, if they're going to have to restructure Social Security, they're certainly going to take the benefits off the larger accounts and more affluent people first. I mean, the everyday person is going to be more protected in whatever scenario. And bank insurance, the degree that they can insure deposits, and they can insure them all. That's the whole point. Oh, deposits are insured. They can't insure everything if you have a major collapse, but the smaller accounts, if you spread out in a few accounts and you have more money in your brokerage accounts, which they can't get at, yes, you're going to be way less vulnerable. And what happened in Cyprus, it was a lot of rich Russians that had big accounts. Those were the biggest losers. Those were the ones they hit. And, of course, when things go bad, people are going to hit foreign depositors more. Iceland went down and basically stiffed all of foreign depositors and foreign loans and protected their own people. So, yes, the smaller accounts, domestic accounts are going to be safer. But, again, I still say have as much as your money in a protected account in your name that is not just a general deposit. They lend against those deposits, and in real estate loans and business loans go bad, they're going against your deposits. But if you have a brokerage account with your stocks or bonds or cash in it, they can't pledge those as reserves.
And well, that's a good thing. Harry, thank you. We're out of time. Harry's website at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, a psychiatrist looks at the paranormal.